Big Bad Wolf.
What's up, all you piggies in Radioland? We are back with the wolf. Hey, I've been getting a lot of phone calls from you piggies lately about how you have been searching for happiness and just not finding it. But don't worry, I'm going to help you stand up to your fears, find meaning, and true happiness. Let's start with fear. Fact. The world is dangerous, super dangerous, and you need to be prepared. The key to overcoming fear is insurance. What's that? You've got some already? Well, it's not enough. If you are living in Cincinnati, you'll need the following. Life insurance. You're gonna die, you may as well get paid for it. Home insurance. You live in Cincinnati, your basement will flood, probably today. Car insurance. We will get on average of 3 moderate snowstorms dropping inches of life-threatening snow onto our streets. You will crash. Health insurance. You know what Skyline does to your colon. You do not want to know what it does to the rest of you. Dental insurance. If you are drinking Cincinnati tap water, you are gonna need this. Tornado insurance. Every 10 years, a tornado comes through our town and knocks down a house or two. Do you want to gamble with those odds? Do you? Pet insurance. That betta fish you bought your daughter has less than a year left of life. She will be devastated. That fish owes you. And the most important, insurance. Who is protecting your protection? When Ryan Gosling is filming in Cincinnati, he has more than one bodyguard. I know that because I got past the first one. It was the second one that got me. You need to double down. Because, little piggies, the first step to happiness is making sure you are around to enjoy it. Yeah!
Big Bad Wolf.
You want another key to happiness? I think it was Wikipedia that once said, love your neighbor as yourself. I have yet to live by a neighbor that follows that motto. I will write it down, slip it into my neighbor's mailbox, and I am still mowing my own lawn. So it is up to you to love yourself. Maybe in the form of a deck. You know your neighbor's not gonna build one for you. Sure, a deck is just some wood a few feet above the ground that you could already put a grill on, but do you know who grills on grass? Sad people and poor people, probably your neighbors. The truth is, the big man upstairs wants you to be happy, so relax.
Don't worry.
And buy a deck.
Be happy.
Big Bad Wolf.
Oh my, you know, we're looking at how money talks to us, how money needs to be treated as a person who has a personality. And as we've taken a look at the wolf, the fictitious wolf who's giving us advice, not all of it is bad, some of it makes sense. We're just modeling here that society, money, is always sending us messages, and before we do what money tells us to do, we're trying to engage our brain, engage our hearts, and say, is this really the way I want to go? Do I mindlessly want to follow the same financial patterns that I've always followed or that everybody I know is following? And we're going to continue that with that today, so let's pray. God, I pray that help us to see things that we hadn't seen before, things in our savings habits, our spending habits, our giving habits, our friendship habits, our aspirations. Help us to see with sobriety the course we're on, and in sobriety and in discipline, get on the course that we ultimately need to be on. Thank you for giving us grace. Thank you for giving us the ability to learn today, and that's what I pray that happens. Amen. I loved some of the things that Chuck said last week. Let's revisit that core passage he looked at from the book of 1 Timothy chapter 6. It says this, "But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It's through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierce themselves with many pangs. We either desire God or we desire to be rich." It's hard to have both those things at the same time. And this says that many people wanted God, had a great relationship with God, but the desire for riches overtook that, and now they've pierced themselves with many pangs. I'm old enough now that I've got enough of a database of my personal friendships, of people I know this has personally happened to. And why is this? It's because the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It's not money is a root of all evil. It's the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. Last couple weeks we've been sort of making us wary of money, looking at the downside of it. Today we're going to turn the corner and start looking at the upside of money. I don't have any contribution to make to the Bible. I've never written any part of the Bible. If God ever asked me to write a book in the Bible, maybe I'd call it, instead of 1 Timothy, I'd call it 1 Tome. And in 1 Tome, I would have a bunch of things I've learned, and I think that all of them would have been in alignment with the things that are in the Bible. And here's one of the things that I would put in the Bible book of 1 Tome, chapter 3, verse 16. Here's what it would say. Money is a root for all kinds of good. This doesn't contradict what we saw before at all. It says the love of money is a root of all sorts of good. Well, inversely, money is also a root for all kinds of good. I mean, obviously, we all know that we can take our money and help somebody live longer by generosity. That's a root of some sorts of good. I have a friend of mine who asked a bunch of people, man, she said, I'd love to find a husband. If you can set me up with dates, just let me know. Nobody came through for her. I got her two dates. They ended up both being losers. But nonetheless, I tried. She got two of them. I just heard another story of another friend of mine who said, he had a friend that said, I'd like to get married, $1,000 for whoever finds me a wife. He was married inside of a year. All of a sudden, people said, I can make money off this. I ought to actually look through my Rolodex. There isn't any Rolodexes any longer, is there? I'll look through my iPhone and actually try to find somebody who is a spouse. Money can do this. We're in a public education system where public education is here in large part due to money, the good of money. It was a unique marriage between religion, where people wanted people to get literate and learn the Bible, and the Industrial Revolution, where employers, business owners, wanted to have a baseline educated workforce to create widgets. This motivation for money caused public education. I've been reading a really great series of books. It's on Genghis Khan. It's historical fiction. It's fascinating. And one of the problems with Genghis Khan, if you know anything about him, you know that he gathered up a bunch of disparate nomad tribes, formed a nation, formed an army, and virtually took over the entire world. And part of the problem with him, part of why he was so ruthless, is he had no value on money. He had no value on trade. It's been said that hunters and gatherers raid, they don't trade. Meaning if your economy is about, I just go kill something and eat it, or I gather berries, you don't value other people groups. You don't trade, financially trade with them. You actually raid them and kill them. This was the problem with Genghis Khan. One specific point, true story, he's trying to starve out a city. He can't break down the walls, so he's trying to starve them out until they all die of starvation. Finally, after almost a year, the governor of the city comes out with a cartload of silver, trying to trade and just buy him off. Genghis Khan just never understood. What is shiny objects? That means nothing to me. I want power. I want conquest. He actually takes the silver. He melts it down into molten silver, pours it down the guy's mouth, and it comes out all the other holes in his head, and he dies. When you don't value money at all, you can do some crazy, strange things. Money isn't bad. What's bad is when we want money more than God, and when we don't discipline and train money. The wolf can be trained. You can train the person that has the personality of money. Libby and I have, since we've been married, we've had four dogs that have all been over about 120 pounds. We like dogs. Dogs are fun. Those of you who have those little yappy dogs, I don't understand those. You know those little gut dogs are like, you ever see somebody they're holding their little yappy dog, and you go up to pet them, oh, so nice, cute, and they go, they show their teeth. Why is it little dogs are always so mean? Am I the only one who's noticed this? They just are. And I think the reason is because when you have a little dog, you really don't have to train the thing. You say, come over here. Just grab it and pull it over here. You don't have to train the thing. You are in complete control, or so you think. Well, when you have a dog that's 120 pounds or somewhere around there, you know if I don't train this thing, it will rule my life. You know you must, because you cannot control it. My first dog was the best trained dog. He was a 130 pound Rottweiler. His name was Magnum. And we didn't have any kids at that point. And so it was basically my hobby. I just trained him over and over and over again. I could take him to a place like Hyde Park Square, and I could put him on stay outside of a restaurant there, and I could go in and eat, and nobody could get him to move. He would stand his post. It wouldn't matter if you would lure him with Grater's ice cream, mint chocolate chip. Wouldn't matter. He wouldn't go anywhere. Our current dog that we have right now is not quite as well trained, but I know I got to get the baseline on him, because if I don't control him, he will control me. And this is the way it is with the wolf. If you don't control the wolf, if you can't get the wolf to heal, he will be gnawing on you incessantly. He will be a nuisance. Last week on NPR, Serena Williams said something that was shocking to many. Here's what she said. I mean, I don't love tennis today, but I'm here and I can't live without it. So I'm still here and I don't want to go anywhere anytime soon. It's not that I've fallen out of love. I actually never liked sports. And I never understood how I became an athlete. I don't like working out. I don't like anything that has to do with working physically. She goes on and says that what her love is fashion, design, the arts, acting. And actually, that's a very grounded woman right there. The greatest female tennis player, arguably, of all time says, I don't like tennis. What's she basically saying here? She's saying that her attitude towards tennis is the same way that our attitude may be, should be towards money. I don't love tennis. I don't love money. But I realize if I don't work it out, I'm not going to be able to have and do and experience the things I want to do. But in and of itself, money, I do not love. The rest of our time, we're going to talk about how to train the wolf. I'm going to share with you 8 ways that Libby and I train the wolf. We'll do better on these some seasons than others. You might not do all of these things, want all of these things. I'm telling you, if you don't have a training regimen for money, money is running roughshod over you. And as I get into these two, it's going to be very easy for some of us to go, oh man, I'm not doing that. I'm a loser. No, try not to think that way. Think of this as stimulus to get you in a training program, not to make you feel bad about where you are or even superior about where you are. Some of us might feel that way. That's awesome if you feel that way coming out of this. But it's a motivation to say, man, there's power, there's good in money if I can get the trainer right. So here's my 8. Number one, I train the wolf by, number one, I give for freedom. I give for freedom. I don't give out a fair share. I give for freedom. Now let me talk about this. First of all, some of us are going, okay, here it goes. Had a money series just so you could talk about giving. No, not really. Hang with me on this one. In fact, if you're real bummed out about this, it's really proof that the wolf has you, because the wolf will never want you to separate yourself from it. The reason why I give is not out of fair share. That's the way the wolf would have us give. And what does fair share look like? There's a basic equation that all of us operate in as it relates to fair share. Here's the equation. Fair share equals you give more and I give less, and that's fair share. Doesn't matter if you're lower class, lower middle class, upper middle class, upper class. This is the fair share formula. When it comes to dealing with the national debt, you get taxed more, I get taxed less. That's just what's fair. When it comes to doing anything philanthropic, well, those people over there, they need to be stepping up. I'm doing good. I should actually be doing less. And this is what the wolf does. The wolf will give us anything he can to make sure we never part with it, because you never part with the thing you love. It's easy to part with a boyfriend and girlfriend you don't love anymore, right? That's easy. In fact, that's fun. But when you have somebody that you actually, who defines you, when that breakup rips your heart out because they've defined you, I give so that I can be free of the spiritual power of money. Because every time I give the wolf away, I say, see, told you. You don't own me. I own you. And I just told you to go over there. I give for freedom. And actually, as I give, in the Bible, if you're a follower of Jesus, if you believe in the Bible, the simple baseline for this is what's called the tithe, 10%. It's not easy, but it's simple to understand. This is not your taxes. This is not your private school tuition. This is 10% that funds the things that God wants happening around the world that's outside of ourselves. And the more money we make, the less likely we're ever going to aspire to that pattern. In fact, the more money we make, studies show, the less as a percentage of income that we give. Actually, in the Depression, there was more people in churches in the Depression that tithe than there are today. Why? Because the less money you make in history, the more likely it is that you give a higher percentage of your income, because the wolf has less of your heart. Here's a more recent statistic from the Bureau of Labor. You can see here that the highest giver as percentage make the lowest amount of money. Maybe this is because since they have less money, there's less love that they have for money. Not sure why that is, but this is a phenomenon that actually Jesus describes in the book of Matthew chapter 19. This is not a American thing. This is a human thing. It's a unfortunate statistic that's always existed. The more money we have, the less likely we are to be generous, because the more addicted to money that we become. And Matthew chapter 9, Jesus said this. Jesus said to disciples, truly I say to you, only with difficulty will a rich person enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I tell you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. And when the disciples heard this, they were greatly astonished, saying, who then could be saved? But Jesus looked at them and said, with man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. These are disciples, many of which had Jack. They had businesses. And they're hearing, whoa, 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 what are you talking about? Jesus is not saying you can squeeze a camel through a little gate and they got to get down on its knees. No, he's saying here's a needle, here's a camel. The likelihood of you having a lot, the more money you have, the higher likelihood it is that you don't know God. The more money you and I have, the less likely that we will have a heart that's in love with God. It's the less likely. And by the way, as Chuck said last week, if we're in this room, we are in the 1% worldwide. We are in the 1% world. In fact, in terms of all of human history, we are in the 0.0001%. We should be concerned. Jesus would say to us, oh, you people at Crossroads, be careful, man. You may as well have a dog go through a needle. It's not going to happen. And the disciples are going, wait, what are you talking about? And God said, well, I come and do something unique in people's lives every once in a while because with people, this is not possible. With God, all things are possible. So the reason I give is I give because I want to have a power over money, and it actually right-sizes my expectations. As I have a percentage that goes out, I actually find it right-sizes the rest of the things that I would like to have and accumulate in my life. So anyway, that's number one training process for us is we give for freedom, to be free from the power of money. Number two, we save for the expected. To train the wolf, save for the expected. I hear people talk about every once in a while, hey, you need to have savings for the unexpected. No, you don't. That's very defeating. How would I ever know how much savings I need? Save the unexpected. I mean, I might have to save for, what if there's a tornado that brings coral snakes up and drops in my yard and I have to get anti-venom? How do I know? What things have I not thought of that I have to save for? No, man, if you save the unexpected, there will never be enough. You're never not sure where you are. We say, what do we expect to happen? Let's save for that. Here's some things we expect to happen. We expect, no-brainer, to have car insurance every 6 months. We expect that. We expect our car to either lose a transmission because one of them is very old or buy another one. We expect that. I expect the older I get, at some point I'm going to get old enough that I'm not going to make the same amount of money right now. I expect to have some sort of savings that's going to help me when I can't earn the same amount of money I am right now. When I was younger, I used to do really stupid things like, well, God is my retirement. What a dumbass thing to say. It sounds so good to say when you're 22. It really does when you're 22, but then you're like, that's really not a smart thing to say. In fact, God would say that is stupid. The book of Proverbs chapter 6. God says this, go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? God says the ant expects that there will be snow covering up the crumbs and will not be able to get them. He expects so every day diligently goes and finds crumbs and stores them away. Some of us are of retirement age and devastation has come our way and something strange has happened. We don't have the savings. I understand that. But I'm saying, and God can meet you where you are and do something unique with God, all things are possible. We just read that before. But man, when you're my age, younger, somewhere, wherever you are, gosh, expect that you are going to need some sense of liquidity when you can't earn what you have right now. By the way, this is part of when I shared my liquidity, which is less than $10,000 a couple weeks ago. Part of why my liquidity is as low as it is, well, major thing is Game Change campaign. That was a big blow to my liquidity, and I'm thankful for it because I think God's doing something in us through it. But the other thing is, I don't expect, as many of us should, I don't expect to be out of work for 3 to 6 months. I don't expect to be laid off. I'm a very rare bird who's in a job where, you know, maybe I'll have to take a salary cut if stuff gets hard at Crossroads some weird day in the future, something like that. But if I'm out of work, not getting a paycheck from Crossroads for 3 or 6 months, it's because my life is tanked. It really is. I've done something morally that's forced me to be gone. And when I started to realize that, I realized, okay, well, my savings should be reflective of that. I don't know what you expect savings-wise, but safely expected. Some of us, we've been great savers. We got massive, massive savings. And let me just ask this. What is the vision for that savings? For many people, the default mode is the vision is more. The vision is because, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you have a business, and maybe you have a multi-generational vision for a business that you see that is going to expand beyond your lifetime. It's going to expand and grow, employ a lot of people, bless your family, bless a lot of people. And perhaps if that's your vision and God's given you that, then you should save the expected, meaning you're going to die, and therefore you probably need to have a big inheritance to keep the vision going forward. But, you know, just having a big amount of money when you're dead so you can give it to your kids and it disincentivizes them from working and they become losers and everyone else got to carry them, that doesn't work. What is the vision for what you're saying? Have a vision and then save for what you expect. Number three, automate priorities. Automate priorities. Anything that's important to me, I just have to automate it. I mean, a lot of us, we say, yes, awesome, I believe in giving, yes, I believe in savings, but for most of us, year by year, we're frustrated at both these things. Why is it? Because we've left it to what's left at the end of the month, at the end of the pay, at the end of the year. Now we got to automate it. Man, I have my mortgage automated because I don't want to forget that sucker and then fall into foreclosure. And when I realized this translates to giving and savings, I did the same thing. I want my giving, my predominant giving, I do my predominant giving at Crossroads through e-gift. I want that sucker sucked out before I spend it. I want my savings in Ing Direct. I want them to get that money and suck that out before I actually can just go to an ATM and use it. I want to automate my priorities. I want to decide what is important for me and then set up some system that actually takes it out. When I first came to Crossroads 16 years ago about, the first person who was hired, 11 people invited me to come and start the church and work with them. And we sat down to have a salary discussion. It was kind of an odd salary discussion. We haven't even passed a bag yet and we're talking salary. But one of the things I said is, I would like to have a set percentage of my salary that you automatically suck out and I can't even get to and it goes into an IRA someplace. I just want to automate that as a priority. I was 30 years old at that time, and it's actually something that they still do for me and for anybody at Crossroads. It's automate. Anything that's important to you needs to be automated. Now, before I go on to the other ones, they're even more practical than this first three, let me just say this. I could talk these things really well, but money still stresses me and Libby out. For there's certain seasons, even though we're training the wolf, it just stresses us out. And it's because even as we do these things, money is not like a lawnmower where you put the oil in it, you get it cleaned up, and then you park it in a shed, and you go back in the spring, and there it is the way you left it. No, money is a living, breathing person. The wolf claws to get out of his constraints. In fact, even after you've trained the wolf, you might someday say, okay, sit. And he looks at you and go, no. And you got to go back through the whole process, push his rear end down, sit. This training regimen of money, we have to stay on top of it. The fourth thing that we have to regularly exercise and work to train, the wolf is to pay cash. Pay cash. The book of Proverbs chapter 22, verse 7. It says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave of the lender. This is a real cautionary tale for consumer debt. We can get to a point where we are in bondage. We don't even want to go to the mailbox because we're afraid of what's going to be there. We don't want to answer the phone. We don't want to, maybe you don't even, this whole series, maybe you don't even know friends that totally checked out of the series because they feel so bad and so enslaved by debt. Any talk about money just drives us into further depression. This is what debt can do to us. It can drive us to our knees. And as a result, Libby and I have aspired to be debt-free. Now we have a mortgage on our house, and you know, I'm not actually hyper anti-debt in all situations. I'm really not. I know a lot of people who read the Bible and believe all debt is bad. I don't believe that. There's a lot of things in the Bible that give us instructions in terms of what to do with debt, but there's not things in the Bible that say all debt's bad. For instance, in the Old Testament, God set up the nation of Israel and he set up their economic system. And a fascinating thing in their economic system was every 7 years to have the year of Jubilee. And the year of Jubilee was basically, If you were in debt, your debts were gone. If you were holding notes on somebody, it was gone. Every 7 years, everybody was debt-free. It was a sign that you are free, God is your rescuer, and no one owns you. Now, there's no data or history that suggests that the nation of Israel ever did this. But could you imagine what would happen if you were in a society where every 7 years you would have no debt? What would happen? If you're lending money, you would realize, I can't just try to take advantage of somebody because this could be gone. I'm not going to have any, the note is going to be ripped up and gone in 7 years. And so what God does is he actually establishes boundaries. If God didn't want any form of debt in any way, shape, or form, he would have told the nation of Israel, let there be no money lenders at all. Instead, he sets up systems to govern it. Now, having said that, be very, very wary all the time of debt. Libby and I have debt on our mortgage, and that's about it. That's about it. We haven't had a car loan for 20 years. We pay cash. We just paid cash for something this last week. Our net worth is even worth less now. Here's why we had to pay cash for something this last week. This is Winston. He's our dog, and we let him sit on our couch, sleep on our couch, stand on our couch, run on our couch. You can see our couch is getting jacked up right now. You can see he's sinking in a specific spot. It's one of his favorite spots. The back of the couch actually is a little bit broken. You can see the cushions are ripped. This is just one section of the house, of the couch. This couch is really beat up. We've had this couch for 8 years. Our dogs are allowed on the house. We only have one dog now, but whenever we have one dog, he's allowed up there. And not only that, we have a lot of people over to our house. Libby and I have determined that with the people coming over, family, parties, meetings, we've probably had 1,000 sweaty rear ends on this very couch. Some of your posteriors has actually costing me money because you've been sitting on my couch. This thing has been degrading for a while. Right before Thanksgiving, we realized, man, we're going to have people over for the holidays, our family. It's going to be kind of weird. Maybe we ought to go get another couch. And man, we have such good credit because we pay cash. We could buy virtually anything, anytime. But didn't have the cash for the couch we wanted. Didn't have the couch, so we waited. Went through Thanksgiving, waited through Christmas. Finally, this last week, I said, hey, let's pull the trigger on this. Went in, saw the couch at Macy's we want, went to buy it, and the guy said, would you like 12 months same as cash? I'm like, sounds really tempting. Some might think, wow, gosh, if you have the cash, park the cash in an account, have it work for you, and then later on, you can pay it off and you have interest. Yeah, the only problem is in the last 10 years, the market is at 0.7% growth. Say it again. Last 10 years, the market is at 0.7% growth. So that doesn't sound like a good strategy. Not only that, even if the market was at 10% growth, I personally would not do that because of how money works for me. Why? Because I would be stressed of hitting that number 12 months. I'd be stressed that I'd forget about it. It would be on my mind. Every time I would sit on my couch, and go, I got to remember to write that check in 6 more months. It would not make me free. Now, these are things for me, okay? Now, I don't have any car debt. I don't want to have any car debt. But for you, maybe you don't understand mechanical things. Maybe you don't trust the mechanic. Maybe when a mechanic tells you something's going to need to be fixed, you don't understand it. So maybe a moderate payment is right for you. I don't know what is right for you. All I'm saying today is this. The wolf will take you to a default position that will not be healthy. You need to train the wolf. You need to figure out what works for you in accordance with your values and go there. So we pay cash. Number four. Number five, stay married or stay single. Stay married or stay single. Told you we're going to get practical today. This last week, I walked into the place where I work out, and there's two ladies who were talking. One of them I knew behind the counter, and they're having some interesting conversation because they asked me an interesting question. I said, Brian, why is it that men who are married and have long-term affairs never divorce their wife? I went, money. It's called half. Half. They looked at me like, that doesn't make sense. It makes perfect sense. Man, if you're married and you got a little something on the side, it's going for long term. You're having the milk and cow and eating it too, whatever all that goes. I'm sure she's not a cow, but you're having all that stuff. That's all going. Why would you divorce and lose half of your income when you can have all that stuff over there on the side? Actually, there's some wisdom there. Tell me what. If you're married right now, the best financial strategy you have going forward is work on your marriage. Keep it. Because what happens, you get divorced, and now you have expectations of the way you live that's split in half amongst two people. Amongst two people. Half the assets, but you still expect the same lifestyle. It doesn't work. Stay married. Work on it. Say, man, I can't afford counseling. You can't afford a divorce attorney. telling you, figure out where your money goes. Go figure out a great vacation. Find hotel sex. Do whatever you can to build your marriage. You want to stay married. It's the best financial strategy you have going. I'm telling you, single, stay single. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be married. That's not a good thing. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying is there's different rules for different situations. So when you're single, don't act like a married person. When you're single, don't aspire to have a mortgage. A mortgage is not a good investment. People used to debate whether it was or not when the market was good. It certainly isn't now. By the time you add in all of the different things, all the upkeep, all the hidden costs, even if it was a good investment, one of the things the Bible says is that when you're single, enjoy your freedom. You need to enjoy your freedom. Enjoy it. Be up for the flexibility that comes your way that us married people can have. Maybe there's an amazing opportunity to live in Sweden, but you're not going to be able to go. It's going to be complicated because you're tied to a house. Maybe God is going to be calling you as one of the people to be a missionary in Bolivia or something like that, but you can't go because you're wedded to a house. Maybe you're going to get married. You're going to find a great husband, a great wife, but now you got this house where you've done certain things with other people in this house, and they don't want to live there. And they maybe have the same thing too. And so now you got to go, how are we going to sell these houses? Now it's complicated getting married because you got different. I suppose if you're renting someplace, you go, hey, let's find the great house for both of us. Enjoy your singleness. Don't allow the wolf to confine you. Stay single, stay married. Number six, live lower. Live lower, lower. Wherever you could live, choose to live lower. What the wolf tells us is to constantly aspire to the next level, constantly aspire to the next neighborhood. One of the research statistics that have borne out over and over and over and over and over again, once you get to a certain level financially where your basic food, clothing, and housing is met, our happiness is exclusively dependent on how well we're doing based on our peer group. That's why when we go over to South Africa, we go, how are these people so happy? They like have nothing. Yeah, but all the people they know have nothing. It's their peer group, so they've sort of normed that out. And so the insidious thing is we actually move, we aspire to get into a great neighborhood, and then when we get in that neighborhood, we've had our bar reset of the lifestyle we should have, and now we're not content because we can't do what other neighbors are doing. The latest study that bore this out again came from a couple psychologists from a couple universities, and here's a snippet of the report. If absolute income matters, as we increase our income, everybody should get happier at a national level, but we don't seem to. So what we are showing is that in terms of life satisfaction, rank is a better predictor than absolute wealth, specifically rank according to your peer group. So we aspire for the neighborhood, we go to the neighborhood, and all of a sudden we have people who have things that we don't have. We hear about their vacations on the block party that we can't take. All of a sudden we're going, oh man, I'm not measured, I don't have it, because this is our new bar set. So what you do is you go to a lower neighborhood, you go down there, and you feel good about yourself because everybody else is below you, and then they feel like a loser because they look at your lifestyle. That's the way to get ahead. Instead of going up here, you come down. Now, you do this, of course, in the name of Jesus. You do this in the name of Jesus. You come down here, and then it sounds sick and twisted, but it's true. You will be more content if your neighborhood and peer group is beneath your earning potential. I don't golf a lot anymore, and if I ever did get to golf a lot, and if I ever got a lot more money than I have right now, I don't think I would join a country club. And I'm not anti-country club. I'm trying really hard today not to say this is exactly what you should do. I'm trying to get your brain going the way to where you can at least have a training regimen. Because here's what I know myself. If I was into golf and I was at a country club, my bar would be reset as soon as I came in the parking lot. Because all of a sudden, I would not be happy with my cars. All of a sudden, I would not be happy with my clubs. I would not be happy because all of a sudden, I'm with people that are doing things that I'm not doing. It would reset my bar. Once you understand this, you say, okay, I want to go lower, and I will be more happier if I have a different set of expectations in my peer group. Live lower. Number seven, focus your pleasure spending. Focus pleasure spending. Back to 1 Timothy chapter 6. I love the God that I serve because I love verses like this. Here it is. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty or to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. It doesn't say as for the rich in this age. Tell them to get rid of all their money. It says, as for the rich this age, tell them not to set their hope on the uncertainty of a stock market, on the uncertainty of ever-expanding wealth. Instead, have them set their hopes on God, and here's what I love, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. This means that part of why the wolf is there is to give us some fun. That means that part of what money is to do is to work hard for us. It's to give us pleasure. But the key is focusing the pleasure. I spend a lot of money on motorcycle stuff. I spend a lot of money buying motorcycles, selling motorcycles. I spend a lot of money on doodads I bolt onto motorcycles. I spend a lot of money on gear I wear when I'm on motorcycles. I spend a lot of money on trips. I spend a lot of jack as it relates to anything on two wheels. And it's an intentional, focused choice because I know I've identified a place where I find pleasure and I get restored. Do you know the place where you find pleasure and where you get restored? And I would just encourage you, spend money there. For me, where I am financially, I can't have multiple places. I have money for one place. I used to be a good golfer. I don't golf anymore because you go, oh, don't you like to get out in creation? Yeah, I like to get out in the center of the fairway, not the rough and in the weeds. And the only way to get out in the center of the fairway is I'm playing a lot. It would take me a lot of money to get to a place I want to be in golf, to have the right gear. Skiing, I used to ski a lot. I haven't skied for 15 years, probably. A lot. I did once. I don't ski at all. Skiing is not there. Why? Because, man, if I went skiing, I got to get all the gear then, and I'm not going to be happy at Perfect North. I know me. I need to be going cat skiing, heli skiing. I need to get the coolest stuff. I go to probably 2 or 3 first-run movies a year. If you can do a lot of first-run movies, that's your pleasure, great. If you can do skiing, golf, and wind sailing or something, great. If you could do, I know for me, I cannot. And so I know where I can focus, and I unapologetically spend a lot of jack in a focused area that actually gives a major return on my life and actually my ministry. I just want to tell you do not get financially stable simply so you can be responsible. You get financially stable so the wolf works for you. So the wolf actually goes after things that you want in life. But if you don't train the wolf, it's never going to happen. You got to train it. That's number 7, 8, and last one I'll share with you. Set your finish line. Set your finish line. Do you know when enough is enough? Libby and I know what our finish line is, and many of them we said, okay, we're done there. Others, we're not quite done yet. Retirement, savings. When I set up a baseline percentage, it's automatically gone there. We said, okay, got that done. We're done. We don't have as much money there as we want to have, but we got a plan that's there. Okay, done. Good. Hit our finish line. Let's keep working that plan. We're in a house right now. We love our house. Great house. Been for 8 years. As soon as we moved into it, we high-fived each other. Done. Never going to upgrade another house. Never, ever. It's wonderful. Love it. Done. We might get a different house someday. We're talking about maybe someday moving with my in-laws. Maybe we need some sort of different thing for that. But in terms of when we live in Cincinnati, where we are, done. Hit the finish line. We love it. We're done. We don't need to upgrade our house. Cars, hit our finish line. Done. Now we'll certainly be buying more cars because they break. But our baseline of where cars are right now, we don't aspire to up them. We don't aspire to go to the next level. I've got a truck that's 3 years old now. It's stickered for $32,000. I had enough cash to spend $19,100 cash, and I bought it a few years ago. We've got another car that we bought for $2,500 that had 127,000 miles on it. It's now got about 160,000 miles on it. We got another car, a little Mazda Miata convertible we bought for $3,000. I got 4 drivers in my car. And those cars, you know, when they break, we replace them with about the same level. I'm not aspiring to go to the next level. I'm not aspiring for a Lexus. You may be, and I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm saying, if that's your finish line, set it and say, okay, now I got to get a Maserati. Now, for whatever it is, what is your finish? Because the wolf is ever encroaching and is always going to be pushing you to more. My clothes. I looked in the closet trying to get ready for what I was going to wear this weekend, and I said to Lois, I need to get some more freaking clothes. I feel bad for you guys. You see me wearing the same thing all the time, over and over. And why is it? Maybe I might get more clothes, but why is that? And it's clothing-wise, I hit my finish line. Like when they wear out or something, or they're obviously painful to look at, I'll deal with it. Or someone gives me something for a birthday or something like that, you know, that's fine. But I hit my finish line there. And again, I'm not saying you can't have regular new upgrades to your wardrobe, but I'm saying, do you know what your finish line is? Because if you're just going to wander around Kenwood Town Center, you will never be done. Never. Because the wolf will tell you that. Know what your finish line is. Set it. So here's my eight training regimens right here. I recommend all these eight. Recommend them all. But maybe you don't like any of these. And the only hill I'm dying on is say this. You got to find them. Whatever they are, you must train your wolf in order to have the kind of freedom and abilities that you actually want in the future and that God wants you to have. God, I thank you that you give us grace and you give us patience. I pray that we would be spiritually grounded as we go forward. Would you give uplifting encouragement for those of us who feel beat down right now? Would you give a sense of sobriety for those of us who feel haughty right now? I ask that we would be grounded enough to be able to look at you and say, if we have you, we have enough. It'd be great to have more, but at the end of the day, having you is enough. And I just declare to everybody in front of everybody here, Jesus, you're enough for me. I love to have more. It's fun having more. But if I have nothing else and I have less than I have right now, I have enough because I have you. You're enough.